We have ignition sequence start.
Short distance, high impact.
5, 4, 3, 2, all engines running.
10 questions with Adam Zwar. Big names, great minds.
Make yourself a cup of tea.
Liftoff, we have liftoff.
Welcome back to 10 Questions. Today's guest is Fiona O'Loughlin. She's a comedy national treasure. I'm in awe of not just how funny she is, but how easy she finds it to be funny. After a relatively late start, she's taken her hilarious, brutally honest act to adoring audiences all over the world. I'll share with you some of her achievements as the interview goes on, but one of her most important achievements is that she's made people who are parents and people who are addicts and people who are just different feel less alone. It's as though she's put on this earth to share her own experiences and give people some relief from the difficulties of life. This interview takes place after a tumultuous year for Fiona. She was in a coma for a month. We'll talk about that. And then she spent 6 months in rehab. She's sober now. She's back doing stand-up. And as usual, I started by asking her when she was most happy.
Well, apart from now, which is really one of the happiest parts of my life, because I feel like I've finally dealt with, my addiction, and I've come out of a long-term rehab and everything's new. But so I'm experiencing happiness now that I haven't had for a very long time. But I think the happiest I've ever been was in the middle of the night after I gave birth to my first child. And it's like very rare in your life, you know, does something not only meet your expectation, you know, they say that, you know, half the joy of things is looking forward to them, but to not just meet your expectation, but then for it to go up and over the waves, that's what it was like for me. I was only 22 and this beautiful little baby boy, and I kept waking up and remembering that it was real, and it was physical. Yeah, it was so happy. It was a physical surge of joy every time I looked at him.
Wow.
Insane happiness. And then it wore off.
That's
it's pretty powerful, that connection with a child. I guess it's so you don't kill them, you know?
You know, that's the thing you hear all the time, you know, that it is an amazing experience, because from the outside it looks okay, but but when people who you know very well go through it and they speak so highly of it, you have to take notice.
Well, I heard the funniest thing the other day. Matt Hardy, who's a great comedian, I love him, and he's just had children, you know, in his late 40s, and he's so embarrassed. He said, "I just want to go back and show everyone who ever tried to tell me, I'm so sorry I didn't listen," you know, like... He's so ashamed of himself because he said, "I couldn't listen." He said, "I've never been more bored in my life hearing people talk about their kids and showing me photos." And now he's just mental for his two daughters. And
oh, yeah.
Forever showing people photos. Although I still believe that no one really ever wants to look at a photo of another person's child.
Yeah, look, I think I've
become...
They
just want to see a photo and everyone says yes, but the truth is they don't. Every cell in your body is going, "Don't show me your stupid kid. I'm not interested."
I'm way more disposed to it as I've got older.
And when you come from massive, like, kids are a dime a dozen with my lot, but, you know, people who have the two and they're like, "Oh, and they've got such different personalities." You're like, really? Get a knife and stab me, girl.
Fiona has 5 children and she's one of 7, and her closest sister has 9. You would have seen a lot of photos.
And if you show someone you know your baby's ugly, I'll tell you, if someone says, "Oh, they've got long fingers," that's all they can talk about. You know, they just grab hold of something. You know, you've got a real doozy on your hands.
It's like when you've seen a performance in a show and you pick out,
"Oh, dear God, yes."
2 things that you like.
Well, what about when it happens to you? So I said, "Gee, you were up there for a long time."
I had a mate who hosted a show, and he did such a good job. He was really funny. But he went out to the crowd afterwards and he met this girl that he knew who was quite keen on her. And they were just talking small talk for a while. And then there was some silence until she finally said, "Well, that happened." Fiona quite rightly says that the only thing worse than getting zero compliments after a performance is getting zero compliments at a funeral, something which she's seen firsthand.
There was no one to give the eulogy because he was so repugnant. And the priest just said, "David was a human being." That happened of eulogies.
Oh, God.
Open with your longest and strongest. David was a human being.
Wow. It's like there's nothing redeeming about poor old David.
He was a car salesman and he's a husband of a wife of mine. A husband of a friend of mine. An ex-husband. So the only people in the church were a couple of taxi drivers and, five women friends. And he was a really rich, obnoxious, loads of money and sports cars, and his favourite saying was always, the boy with the most toys wins. Oh. And I'll never forget, at his funeral, his ex-wife had put a placard up against the coffin, "The boy with the most toys still dies."
Oh my God.
Sometimes I remember that and I think, did that really happen? That was extraordinary, that funeral.
An ex-wife, a couple of friends and some taxi drivers is what I call a pretty good turnout. We moved on to question two, which is, who would you like to apologise to and why?
I think I'd like to apologise to my kids, but not in their forms they're in now, but as they were, the older. I had them in two batches and for a while I went down that road of, I'm the mother, this is how it is. And then I really changed, I thought, this is not, I came up with a lot of very, what was regarded as off the wall ideas of mothering and let go of the reins a lot for the last two and had so much joy. And I would like to go back to the older three when they were, five and six. And say, it doesn't have to be like this, I've found a better way. It's hard to explain.
Well, you're a kid.
I just think...
You're a kid yourself. Hey? You're a kid
That's
yourself.
Right. I was so young, yeah. And it didn't last long, my reign of mothering, until I let go. But I regret every day I wasted, It was a strange time, I came from that era where children are seen and not heard. And I remember even when they were born, Mum saying to me, is he a good baby? And he's like, well, how could he not be a good baby? Crazy. I think we do, my grandmother said something very funny once and I used it in stand-up. She said, the problem these days, people are having fewer children and they mean more to them. And that sounds horrendous. But there is so much truth in that.
Yeah.
That, it's not that they, obviously they mean the world to you, but I think it's pretty shameful the way we rely on our children to fulfill our bragging rights,
Yeah.
But how did they, people who bandy around their kids year 12 marks, their final year score, and it's just like, that's great, but can they make conversation? Are they kind, There's so many more, so many deeper ways to measure success.
My thing is always seeing those parents rocking up with their kids to Australian Idol, the kids who couldn't sing.
Oh, my God. I don't understand how that happens because my kids are performers and I don't have love deaf ears, I can hear a good voice or a bad voice, even of children I love to death, It's crazy how people can't hear it.
It's so interesting.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. It's love death ears. I think you've just said it perfectly. I think that you've just explained the whole thing.
Yeah, they can't hear because they're blinded or deafened by their love. Crazy.
Yeah, Yeah, no, that's a really good way of putting it.
Makes a great viewing, though.
We'd like to thank those parents.
Oh, dear.
Question three, what is your greatest regret?
Well, professionally, it would be I was in Montreal and just tired, really tired one night, and I had my youngest with me, and she really wanted to watch a movie and get room service, but I had a podcast to do, and I said to my agent, can you please get me out of that podcast? I just haven't got it in me. And I was just being lazy. Of course I had it in me. And he did get it. He did ask me a couple of times, am I sure? I said, yeah, I'm absolutely sure, you know. And so I chose to eat a hamburger and watch a crap movie instead of going on Mark Maron's podcast.
Oh, there you go.
What an idiot.
Oh, when was that? When was that?
Oh, it's about 6 years ago, more.
But you know what? You never know, and it's the thing is, there are a lot of shit podcasts out there, and how are you to know that Mark Maron was going to be a good one?
He already was a good one. I just didn't know anything. Idiot.
Question four is, what will you still need to do to feel you've lived a satisfactory life?
Well, I think be more honest. Not that I feel I don't say things that aren't true, but there's a lot of things I don't say, you know. I'm finding great excitement in this new recovered life I'm living, and particularly it's really feeding down into my stand-up. And there's so much more to say, you know, not all of it. I think we get very – it's a terrifying world to look – to be different, you know.
Yeah.
There's stuff that, you know, I'm not even ready to say it yet, but I think women need to talk about a lot more than we do. You know, women always have this satisfied belief, and that if women were in charge of the world, you know, there wouldn't be war. And indeed, I think there wouldn't, but I think we need to put our money where our mouth is. And I really want to get cracking on this, to get some sort of resolution on abortion. Like, not as in a resolution of one way or the other, because I've beliefs that belong in both camps, you know. I don't understand for a second how anyone could want, like, how the right to life movement, their idea of the win. You know, it's all about winning, both sides. If we can lose this idea of winning and go, look, this is what we're going to agree on, good luck to both of us, and move on. Like, I think women have got a lot to do on this subject, and I think we're more than capable of it. And what I can say is, like, what I can't bear with the right to life is, and I'll tell you the things that shit me about both sides, the right to life movement, they actually want a woman who's had an abortion to believe that she's murdered a child. That, to me, is like wanting someone to go insane. How could you? It's obviously not murder if your soul believes it's not. Then it's impossible, you know. And then on the flip side, unborn children aren't protected up to 24 weeks after, you know. That's quite late. That's the only thing. That's where it bothers me, the 24 weeks, you know, because we're living in a world where you can save a child at 24 weeks, born
yes.
prematurely. But you can choose. And I'm just saying, can we talk about this?
Yeah.
But it bothers me, not as a busybody, I don't want to go placarding anywhere or hurt anyone's feelings. As a human being, I've got a question about that. And
yeah.
can I please voice it without being accused of being a right-wing bigot and put me in the same bracket? You know, it does come under the banner for me of social justice. And I just think women have to talk.
Sorry for my phone beeping during that delicate conversation. Had to deal with a minor family emergency. But we return to the subject with Fiona saying she wants to be able to have an open discussion about abortion without being silenced by what she calls the cool kids.
That's crazy that a president has to either be pro-life or pro-choice.
Yeah.
Like, I would hate to have to be either.
Yeah, yeah.
I find them both repugnant. I find them both incredible, you know. The best pro-life and the best pro-choice women I know come from compassion, and that's where it should only come from. And all the others should fuck off, you know. Those nutters with their socks and sandals with placards, you know, and also the Nazis on the other side screaming us down if we've got a question. Fuck off.
What did Bill Clinton say? He said it should be legal, safe and rare.
That's beautiful.
Mm.
So that's what I want to get real about and maybe write about, explore, you know.
Can I just ask you, with the stand-up, do you need to process something that's gone on in your life before you actually take it on stage?
It's a pretty quick turnaround. I mean, I guess the gags come first and then the sort, you know, and then it kind of gets deeper. Like, I wouldn't do a show about, like, I was in a coma last year, 2016, like, complete organ failure, the work, so given 7% chance of life.
Oh my God.
I was making jokes as soon as I got on stage, you know, but it's only, I wouldn't write a festival show about it. You know, I'm not doing a festival show about it until 2018, and that'll be 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's where I'll put, you know, make sense of it all, and maybe there'd be a narrative to it or. But certainly I remember lying there, and just too good to use the lines. I'd been in liver failure, and apparently your liver is your anger organ. I woke up from this coma a month later not knowing what had happened. Absolutely furious. And you'd think, you know, if you woke up from being a month in a coma, you'd be a bit happy about that. But I was livid. And this, I remember this nurse came in and she said, "And what did you used to do?" Just as she was taking my blood or something. So I mean, obviously I didn't look great. But
my God.
I thought, that's a bit rough. Anyway, out of my mouth came, "Oh, I used to blow sailors down by the wharf during the war."
Straight away. It's like you're just ready to go.
Yeah, I was ready to fire. But
I've got a heckler. I've got a heckler. Here we go.
When that's kind of, it's funny that that was the, you know, first thing, well, funny, it's funny that funny was the first thing to come back to life. But, and I certainly put that on stage within weeks of being out of hospital. You know?
Oh, that's brilliant. Did you dream when you're in a, did you dream when you're in a coma? Did you have any kind of?
Shocking dream, and it was the same dream. I was so terrified. I didn't know, well, a lot of people don't know a lot of things about comas. Not all of us get to be in one.
Yeah.
But I was, you actually have sleep and wake in the coma.
Oh.
Hard to explain.
Yeah, yeah. Of course you would.
But whenever I was afraid to sleep, because the same dream would happen every time, and I was, and I don't know what sense my, you know, intelligence had made of what my situation was. But I was a fish on a charter boat, and there was, I can still see the fisherman, and it was up in Kakadu, and he had a family on the boat, a mum, dad, two kids, and they were catching barramundi. I was a barramundi, and what happened was, and I really was this fish in my dream. He'd say to the family, "We just catch them for fun. We throw them back in the water." And I'd slip down the side of the boat and I couldn't, they didn't know I was there. And I'm a fish trying to say, "I'm here, throw me back in the water," desperate for someone to find me and throw me back in the water.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you don't have to be Freud to work that one out, but I was terrified of sleeping because I knew that I'd become the fish again. So I've actually got post-traumatic stress from this fucking
fish. Yeah. Oh, Fiona, that's full on.
It was really full on.
What, and you were in a coma for a month, were you?
Yeah. I was actually, I was being gassed in my apartment. I had this apartment in Paran and the gas heater was completely malfunctioned, and I thought I had early Alzheimer's because I was forgetting things.
Yeah.
And then I forgot a lot of things. I forgot that I was an addict and started drinking again.
Yeah.
I was just a mess, an absolute mess. And if only I'd gone to the doctor and got my carbon dioxide levels checked, but I just didn't have the wherewithal to do anything. And every time I went home, I'd crawl into bed and sleep and sleep because I was enjoying the carbon monoxide, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So
it's gas leak.
Yeah, and then one night my daughters were in the neighbourhood and they thought, we'll just go check on Mum. She hasn't been that good. And there I was, dead. Well, as good as.
Oh, my God.
So I'm still rebuilding. So after that, I kind of physically recovered. It took a long time. But mentally it took, you know, and then I was just no good at all. So put myself into a very hardcore long-term rehab to kind of root out the cause of, you know, go right to the guts of it without any worry about what the outside world was doing. I just let it all go and decided to stay as long as it took, or I'd be putting out spot fires for the rest of my life, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, I lived through it. I don't really believe in fate, you know, that never makes sense to me when there'd be 30 babies have died of starvation since we started this podcast. So I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I do believe that if you've got life, you're a dickhead if you don't use it, you know?
Absolutely. And so 6 months you were there?
Yeah, cleaning toilets and just literally, as I said, recalibrating, you know?
Yeah.
Learning how to be again. I'm a very lucky addict that I was very late to addiction, you know? So I was able to rediscover who I was before.
Mm.
And, you know, some of the people I was in rehab with, they start using at 12, you know?
Right, yeah.
So they've got to actually find out who they are without, you know, substance.
Is it?
But for me, it was really good fun rediscovering, you know. I was 36 when it grabbed me by the throat, so I had a lot of recall.
On behalf of all comedy fans, I want to say how grateful we are to have Fiona back and bringing the material she worked up in intensive care to a wider audience. Mark Maron, please give her a second chance. Question 5 is, who is the person who most influenced you and how?
Oh, without a doubt, my best friend, Jasmine. I met her at boarding school when I was 15. She's just a force of nature, this woman. And her, you know, she swims upstream. Her life was tough as it could be, you know, her mother married a pretty scary guy who was Jasmine's father, and they lived in Tennant Creek. So she grew up with alcoholism and violence, and something in her has always just been, she kind of, and I love this when people who aren't religious, like she doesn't have any religion, and yet her life is led in the service of others. And for Jasmine, it's always been children, and she's raised easily 17 children, mostly like two of hers, biological children, but Aboriginal babies that are down and out. And what she does is extraordinary. She doesn't go through the channels of fostering whereby then you get paid a stipend by the government and, you know, there's red tape. She hates red tape. She does it as a friend to people who are struggling. She says, well, if you need me to have the baby, I can. And, you know, let me know when you're okay. So she does this for nothing. And she's, like at the moment, she's my age. She's just taken on another one.
Wow.
And she's 53. It's incredible. And I remember she said to me once, because I got into fostering up in Alice Springs because of Jasmine, although I was too gutless to do it the way she does it. But she said to me, because when I first saw her doing it, and she would hand these babies back in a heartbeat because that's what she believes the right thing to do, and the babies are better off with their mothers, but their mothers were just too sick. And she doesn't judge, you know. And I said to her, but don't you get, you know, aren't you bereft when you hand the baby back? Like, he's been your baby for 2 years. And this is a baby I remember 25 years ago that she had. And she said, oh, God, Fiona, nobody owns babies. And she's really hard. She's always telling me what a fucking idiot I am. So nobody fucking owns babies, Fiona. She said, every ass needs wiping. Doesn't matter who wipes it. Basically, get over yourself and get on with it. And she did the same for me when I went into rehab. And she's been there. She just took over them, even though my kids are young adults. You know, their mother was not available for most of the year, and she just picked it all up for me.
What a great person.
I know, I kind of want her sainted or something, and it's extraordinary to think, too, that she's lived her life like this for no reward. There's no reward on the other side in her manner, you know, that's not part of her design, you know.
What an amazing person.
Absolutely.
What a great philosophy. Every ass needs wiping.
Every ass needs wiping. Doesn't matter who wipes it. She's like, I always call her Mother Teresa with a mouth like a sailor.
Probably very genuine. It's a really good way of putting it. It's a really good way of being. Question six, when was the last time you cried and why?
Probably 2 nights ago. I put a bit of time aside to cry every evening. I love crying, always have, but it's really part and parcel of post-traumatic stress, like, to just let it out instead of, I've kind of had to learn how to do it. I'm almost a nutbag hippie now with my meditating, but certainly I cry a lot.
And how do you do, like appointment crying, how do you kind of, do you need triggers?
No, it usually happens when I'm, I have always found sleep quite amusing. Even when I was a kid, I used to share a bedroom with four sisters, or five girls in one bedroom.
Wow.
I remember lying there when I was a kid, I used to say to the other girls, I'm like, don't you think it's weird? Don't you think this is funny? And they're like, what? I'm like, well, one half of the hemisphere just lies down at night and waits to become unconscious. They never really thought it was very funny, but it's always amused me the way we just get, you know, horizontal and wait to become unconscious. So I do a lot of ruminating and, yeah, before I sleep, like most people. And I guess at the moment it's self-soothing, you know, that's okay. That coma happened. It was very scary. If you want to cry about it, go right ahead.
And what kind of meditation do you do?
I'm really good at it. I can do I never knew that I'd be good at this, but I can do it all by myself. I just take myself to a different scenario. I often use the beach in Broome and just walk along a beach.
It's nice.
And the thought, as those annoying thoughts come into your head, you just flick them away like you would have an insect.
That's great. And you find that helps?
So much. To be able to, you know, to have this key that can switch you off. It's pretty special.
Studies show that over half the people who spend time in intensive care will have post-traumatic stress disorder, and 40% will suffer clinical depression, which leads me to ask Fiona question seven, what's your current state of mind?
I have peace of mind, which is what addicts long for. You know, it's the one thing you can get from sobriety that you can't get from any substance, you know. It feels like peace of mind every now and then when you in active addiction, but it's not. It's numbing, or it's wherever it takes you. You never go peace of mind. God, it's heaven.
Yeah.
Waking up and not going, holy crap, who do I have to say sorry to today? Or. And putting more and more distance between you and shame.
Yeah.
You know, heaven on a stick.
I have enough shame if I go to a party sober and and wake up the next morning and think, what did I say? Little elephant brain. Question eight. This is question eight. What do you consider your greatest achievement?
I don't think I've achieved it yet. What would it be?
That's good. That's a good answer.
Oh, I think, yeah, okay, I'll leave it at that.
Since she didn't mention her achievements, here are just a few of Fiona's that I know about. She's raised 5 kids. She's won Best Newcomer at the 2001 Melbourne International Comedy Festival. She won the award for Funniest Show as voted by her fellow comedians at the 2006 Melbourne International Comedy Festival. She was nominated for a Barry Award for Best Show in the 2007 and 8 Melbourne International Comedy Festivals. She sold out venues all over the world, appeared on countless TV shows, and has tirelessly used her own experience to bring awareness to alcoholism. Moving on to question 9. Who would she want on her side in a battle and why?
Lawrence Mooney. And when I think of battles for me, they're verbal, you know. And it would be wonderful to have, not really Lawrence, someone like Lawrence with a sharp tongue, to go into bat for you. It's really hard being a single female with big families.
Yeah.
You know, sexism is still so alive and well. And I feel sometimes because you don't, I know it sounds a little bit old-fashioned, but just being that one lone lady, people do take advantage of you.
Yeah.
Or rely on your sensibilities not to arc up, you know. So, no, I would love to have an acid tongue partner when it's needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm no fool, you know. I know when someone's being an asshole. There's one thing I've got, you know, so many shortcomings, but I was born with this, I remember when I was married, I used to have to tell my husband who the dickheads were, you know, he just didn't know. I can smell a fuckwit from a mile away. So it's particularly uncomfortable to have a fuckwit tell you what's what and you're too polite to do anything about it, you know. And I've seen Lawrence in action defending his own wife or his own... I've always been a bit jealous of it. I wouldn't mind some of that.
He's amazing with that. Look, I'm good at defending other people, but not myself. So
yeah, I'm the same, madam. Yeah, wouldn't it be nice to have a bit of that for you?
Yeah, yeah. But you're right. I've been hit with the politeness thing as well, and I don't know why. I've tried to put it down to religion, actually. My religious upbringing. But
yeah. Be nice. Don't feel. Don't cry. Don't talk. Be nice. You know.
But let's get back to Lawrence Mooney, who's been cited multiple times on this podcast by Australian comedians as the person they most like by their side in a battle.
And he's so unapologetic because there's so much crap out there that... I'll give you an example, right? This is the sort of thing that shits me. This friend of mine, just this passive, I'm better than you crap.
Mm.
She's got... And this is, you know, from the fairly traditional Catholic branch of my connections, but her 18-year-old's got a girlfriend, you know, and she goes, oh, but it's all very innocent. And I thought, geez, I wished I could have been gutsy enough to say, how the fuck do you know? Like,
yeah.
Are you in the car with them?
Yeah.
And what's the subject there? As aren't innocent, therefore they're bad, you know? What are 18-year-olds supposed to be doing, you dumb fucking bitch? My brain went straight to, she said, oh, but it's all very innocent. And my brain went straight to, I had to stop my tongue. I was just like, because I want to go, oh, so he's not fingering her. But imagine if you said that in polite company, you'd be the lunatic. Where, in fact, she's the lunatic for insinuating anything about anyone that she knows nothing about, you know? I can't wait to be 80. I'll fucking rip the lid off this custard, I tell you.
Yeah, I can't wait for that either.
There's some certain age, hopefully not 80, but
I reckon just do it now.
I just said it on a podcast, didn't I?
Let's go. And the final question, Fiona, what would you like your last words to be?
I love you.
Oh, perfect.
And I bloody hope I've got someone to say it to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice.
I mean, that's what I haven't achieved yet. My poor husband, you know, but we were, it was never right, you know, and I was just too gutless to say so. And the restraints of Catholicism, and I remember I promised my kids, you know, I actually made this promise because I believed it, and I thought there's enough stress in the world for everybody. I said to them from a very early age, the one thing you never have to worry about is we're never getting divorced. So just take that off the table. No, you know, what a bloody thing to promise. And so, yeah, I'd love to meet I'd love a boyfriend. I've never really had one.
We have ignition sequence start.
Short distance, high impact.
5, 4, 3, 2, all engines running.
10 questions with Adam Zwar. Big names, great minds.
Make yourself a cup of tea.
Liftoff, we have liftoff.